You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
You're on riverboat gambling trips.
You're gonna die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DM's always open. And smash the button so you get this mother clucker once it goes live. We will talk to Alex Smith later on in the show, my favorite hockey handicapper from the Ice Guys against the number. We talk about betting the Stanley Cup playoffs. Alex does expect fireworks between Florida and Washington. That game is tonight, and the total opened 6.5 over minus 15. I'm looking at the board right now. The South Point has 6.5 over minus 40. Other books at 35 and 30, but this will be a series that should have a ton of offense. Florida's the better team, but Washington can also score. So Alex explains why he likes those games mostly over on a game-by-game basis. Also, an interesting strategy in elimination games that you won't want to miss. Kentucky Derby field is set, and there's a new favorite on the betting board at Circus Sports. Zandon in the 10 hole. Has eclipsed Epicenter. Epicenter's been the favorite for weeks now, maybe even months. Zandon plus 490. 100 wins, 490. And, of course, this is all pari-mutuel now because the post positions are finalized. So these numbers will change over at Circa. That's the way it works from this point forward. Epicenter, 5-1. Messier plus 650. Taba, 8-1. Mo Donegal, 10-1 in the one hole. Uncle Kirk has me on three horses from months ago. Got positions on Simplification, the 13 horse at 18-1. That's locked in. These are all future bets. So Simplification, 18-1. Classic Causeway, 20-1 in the 17 hole. And White Abario, 40-1. That's the 15 horse this year at Churchill Downs. Those odds way lower. That's probably my best shot, although I will talk with the boys tonight on the spaces, Uncle Kirk, Colin Sheehan, Paul Zilm, about the chances for White Abario, who I believe is as low as 10-1. Zilm has 12-1 on the horse. So that's the way the cookie crumbles. We have all 20 horses. The field is set. And we will discuss the Kentucky Derby in depth tonight, again, on the Twitter spaces at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. This was inevitable. You knew I was probably going to do something like this eventually, given how much I talk and tweet and text about Dylan Cease. I feel like I've watched almost every start he's made since April of 2021. I've seen how much better he is, how more in control he is. The walks don't rattle him anymore. The control is better, and he's learning how to throw pitches for strikes and then the chase pitches. You know, he came into the league just, he had great stuff. He didn't really know where it was going. He's got much better command and control, and you see that in his numbers. I've got his baseball reference page pulled up right now. He's got, let's see, 12.1 strikeouts per nine, but the walks per nine is what I want to look at, 3.1. Now, small sample size, 29 innings, but you look at his four seasons now in the show. In 2019, 4.3 walks per nine. In 2020, 5.2 walks per nine. 2021, 3.7 walks per nine. And this season, as I said, 3.1. One of those walks is intentional, too. So in 29 innings, Cease has 10 walks and one intentional walk. But the strikeout-to-walk ratio is just awesome. 39-10. I know there are ones that are better. But given where he's been, you know, in 2020, he's 44 strikeouts and 34 walks. Last year, he struck out 226 guys. I think I'm more than okay betting on Cease right now to win the AL Cy Young because it's something I want to root for. He's so fun to watch pitch. The over on his strikeout prop has hit 4 out of 5 times this year. You look at his 4 starts against the Angels, actually 5 starts, struck out 11 Angels, 9 Royals, 8 Rays, 8 Tigers, and 3 Cleveland Indians on the road. But Cleveland, not really a big strikeout team this year. So this is the type of guy, I believe he's going to keep this going. He's not really a household name yet. But if you look at the prices, he's being bet like a household name. The only three pitchers that have consensus odds shorter than Dylan Cease are Shane Bieber, Justin Verlander, and Garrett Cole. That's it. Cease has the, third shortest odds at PointsBet, plus 650. And this is the importance of shopping around, as you know. And I tweeted this out at ChickenXDinner. I sent 8-1 because that's a number that I feel like everybody can get. There are some 850s on the board. Some of you that live in a Fox Bet state have 9-1. If you live in New Jersey, Tipico's got a 10-1. And I know some people are saying BetOnline's got 10-1. I don't give out BetOnline odds because I'm just trying to keep it legal and local here in the states. But yes, if you do what you got to do, you get a better number than 850. But he is 6-1 at MGM, 650 at PointsBet, 7-1 at DraftKings, 750 at FanDuel, 8-1 Superbook, 850 at BetRivers. And then I mentioned a 9-10-1 on the board. I want to give a hat tip to my buddy Todd for this because he texted me yesterday and said, hey, remember when they were lining CSK props at 4.5? I'm like, yeah, I do. Those were the good old days. We may not ever see a 4.5 again on Dylan Cease. I'm telling you, we're not going to. I think his prop yesterday was 7.5, juice to the over, like minus 125 or minus 130, and he just blew through this Angels lineup. And I'll tell you what, and my brother texted me this too. I know he watches a lot of White Sox games still, and he, of course, pitched in the White Sox organization, so he's always going to be very tight with that team, and he's going to follow that team. He said, I don't remember the last time a player struck out Mike Trout 3 times. I'm like, yeah, you don't see that every day. Trout will strike out 3 times in a game, but not to the same pitcher. Like, he'll strike out 8th, 9th inning. That's how good Dylan Cease's stuff is. So I'm more than okay putting that bet in now. I know the Superbook closed him when the season started at like 12 or 13-1. I'm like, wow, that's respect. Those odds are shorter now, and they've been halved at some spots. 8-1, 850, though, I'm willing to bet that right now at May 3rd. Didn't get the best number, but if he keeps pitching the way I think he can, this price is going to keep going down. And I'm in on Dylan Cease. I'm also staring at the White Sox price to win the AL Central right in the face. It's just looking at me, plus 125. Multiple American books have moved the Minnesota Twins to the favorite. So you can get the White Sox now. There's a couple 125s on the board and a couple plus 120s available. This is that old psychological thing. Do I double down or was I wrong? I go back and forth on this, back and forth, back and forth. You would think regression would hit the White Sox in a positive way. Run differential, minus 21. 9-13. 3-7 last 10. They've had a bunch of injuries. I mean, you look at the sheet. They've had so many guys on the shelf already. Eloy Jimenez is out for a while. He's only played 11 games. A.J. Pollock has played 10. Yoan Moncada hasn't played a single game yet. Those are three of their best hitters. Luis Robert was on the shelf for a while. He's played 15 games out of 22. The rotation, I mean, these guys getting starts this year are not going to be starting, hopefully, knock on wood. Vince Velasquez, 4 starts. Dallas Keuchel, 4 starts. Jimmy Lambert, 2 starts. Lance Lynn hasn't even touched a baseball this season yet for the White Sox. Giolito's made 3 starts. He's been good, ERA of 2.57. The whip isn't great, 1.28. The bullpen has just been erratic. They have too much talent, though, to stay down this long. And look, I'm not just – this isn't a White Sox podcast. I mean, I just so happen to like Dylan Cease to win the Cy Young, and I have a preseason position on the White Sox. This could be for any team that you have. If you made a bet on the Atlanta Braves to win the NL East, they are 5 games back right now at 11-13. If you made a bet on the, let's see, that's a bad example because that division is very, very tight with LA, San Diego, and San Francisco. I mean, 14-7, 15-8, 14-8. None of those are bad bets by any stretch of the imagination. But say a bet on, let's see, well, I don't even want to go to Boston, 9-14 because they're not winning the AL East. I feel confident about that. Tampa Bay. If you bet Tampa Bay, they're 13-10. They're 4 games back. You could still get a decent price on them to win the AL East because of the love for the Jays and the Yankees. Now, the White Sox aren't playing good baseball like Tampa, but that division, I'm telling you, I don't think by July 1st, the Guardians, the Tigers, the Royals are going to be in contention. So those are going to be very, very winnable games. And Minnesota is about as healthy as it gets, at least from where they started to where they're at now. The White Sox are playing at like 50% half these games, at least from the lineup. I mean, they've had big bat after big bat after big bat miss time. I'm not in love with the way they've started, but I also think, you know, if I was so happy to lay minus 190, minus 195, why don't I come back and take plus 125? It's a question that I don't know that I have the answer to. I'm just so jaded by how poorly they are, and I don't want to chase a dead team down the hole. But in this division, I expect them to rise to the top. It's a terrible division. There's no Yankees. There's no Dodgers. There's no Mets in this division. So I'm torn on it. You know, that team has so much talent. Now, look, it's a part of the game in baseball. Injuries are sometimes more than half the battle. And if they keep getting guys hurt, they're not going to win the division. But I'm sort of banking on regression, not only on an injury basis, but on a performance basis. So that's where my mind's at. I know some of you have bigger prices. You got minus 195, minus 200, and I was very happy to lay that because I thought there was like a 70, 80% chance they win this division. Clearly, my forecast was wrong, but that doesn't mean that they can't win the division. So that's what I'm thinking about on Tuesday, May 3rd. Do I come back and hit the Sox again? Haven't decided yet. I love that we have odds up for the offensive and defensive rookie of the year. I've been in a bunch of group threads and talking to a lot of people that cover the NFL and gamble on the NFL, and it's amazing to me. Like, I'm in a thread with four or five guys, another thread with three, four guys, and all of us are sort of making a case for rookie XYZ. One guy loves Drake London. Another guy loves Chris Olave. A third guy likes Sky Moore. And we all give reasons to why this player is the best player for the bet. But we don't really know. You know, this is a weird year, too. Kenny Pickett's the favorite at pretty much every single book. Consensus favorite. He's 550 at FoxBet. Actually shorter at DraftKings and FanDuel, 5-1. And then 650 at the Borgata and BetMGM. But is Kenny Pickett winning the starting job in Pittsburgh? I don't think so. I mean, I don't know that. I mean, there's a long way to go. If he wins the job, sure, he's a bet that you probably want to make. Because most years, it's a quarterback with an opportunity to play. And Pittsburgh is a well-coached team, and they're always perennially close to being a playoff team. And Mike Tomlin works his magic, and that team usually comes to play. But I feel like Trubisky's going to start at least three or four games. That's my gut. So is a guy who plays 11, 12, 13 games going to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year? I don't know. Willis is backing up Tannehill. Barring an injury, that's Tannehill's job the whole season. And you look at the odds on Willis, I mean, he's way down the sheet, 33-1 at one book. Now, some people bet because they think that there may be a change, or Tannehill gets hurt, or Tannehill becomes Tannehill, or whatever. You know, there's a big range on Malik Willis right now. 12-1, 12-1, 13-1, 16-1, 33-1. But I wouldn't bet either quarterback. I like Garrett Wilson a lot. I just don't know about his quarterback. Wilson, 8-1, 8-1, 8-1, 950, 10-1. Jahan Dotson is, I think, one of the better players in this draft that nobody talks about. And there's a guy that's going to be pretty much in the slot from day one. I think bets like this are about opportunity. And scary Terry McLaurin's going to be their number one. But there's a possibility where Dotson is the number two receiver, or not the number two, he's the second best receiver, I guess. Because he's going to be in the slot. He's going to be like the joystick guy. So he's not going to line up out wide every single down. That one is interesting to me. And he gets loose, look out. You're seeing him 14, 14, 14, 16-1. That's the guy that jumps off the page for me. But all of these receivers have potential. I mean, Jameson Williams, did you see that he's, like, going to be at training camp, he said? This was a guy that, you know, blew out his knee in the national championship game. And that's why he slid down mock drafts, and that's why his draft position prop was as high as 18, 19, 20 and a half. And he ends up going in the top 12, and now he's like, yeah, I'm going to be good to go. ACLs aren't the way they used to be. They are not as serious anymore. Guys come back all the time from ACLs. Brinson was talking about this on Spaces last week. He said, look, an ACL is nothing anymore. An Achilles is way worse. An ankle is way worse. ACL, you go in there, you fine-tune it, you change it out. Proper rehab, these guys are good to go. It's like Tommy John in baseball. Guys come back from Tommy John all the time. Jameson Williams, 10-1, 10-1, 10-1, 12-1. Olave, I mentioned. Sky Moore, I mentioned. London, I mentioned. Garrett Wilson, I've mentioned. I mean, all of these guys have the potential to be the best wide receiver in the NFL. And I think the market is telling you, when you look at it, it's like, wow, the books don't know who's going to win this award. Let's just give all these guys away between, let's see, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-1. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 players between 6-1 and 12-1. They don't know. But if you get ahead of it and you could find out which player is going to get the most reps on offense and which player is going to fit into his system the best, you're going to get ahead of the curve. I'm still working on it, but I love that we can bet this less than a week after the draft. We don't know where these guys are going to line up on the field, most of them. We don't know how many touches or targets they're going to get. But we can bet on it. Defensive player of the year, or a defensive rookie of the year, rather, is a little more interesting because I do like these corners a lot. You know, you look at the prices. Hutchinson's the favorite, plus 450. Thibodeau, 5-1. Trevon Walker, about 7-1. Jermaine Johnson, 9-1. And then you can get Stingley at 10 and Gardner at 10. I love Stingley Jr. I think he's an exceptional talent. And he's starting to move down a little bit, 8-1, 9-1. That's a guy I feel like is going to be a bona fide lockdown corner. But the NFL historically gives this award to guys that get to the quarterback and sack the quarterback. And that's why the edge rushers, all those guys, Hutchinson, Thibodeau, and Walker, are 1, 2, 3. I would personally bet Thibodeau. I think he's the best player at 5-1. I guess that makes sense. Last year, I thought it was so obvious that Micah Parsons was going to be the ROI. I mean, I couldn't get enough Micah Parsons. This year, it could be any of those three guys. But I would rank them in order of betting. Thibodeau, Hutchinson, Walker of the edge guys. I would probably bet Stingley, though, at 10-1. We got time to break this down. These are markets that are out there right now. And I still think it's cool that we can bet on this. The season starts in September. But we can hit offensive and defensive rookie of the year right now. Adam Chernoff was on the show on, let's see, it would have been last Friday. He posted a great thread on Twitter, man. Cash out or not. And it's a thread where Chernoff explains why cashing out is a terrible choice 99% of the time. You should go check it out. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but there's very good information in there. The strategy behind it, why the books do it, why the bettors are enticed by it. If you just type in Adam Chernoff's handle, at Adam Chernoff, C-H-E-R-N-O-F-F, and then type out cash out in the search bar, it'll pop right up. And he explains, to start it out, the premise of cash out is built on the same one that fueled the popularity deal or no deal in the mid-2000s. The cash out dilemma fits the player's happiness of having something guaranteed versus the regret of potentially having nothing at the expense of value. But it's a powerful hook, and the bookmakers know it. And this is why the messaging behind the cash out is disguised to read something like this. Lock in a profit. Guarantee a win. Get your money back early. Chernoff joke, though, in reality, most of the time, and by most of the time, he says 99% of the time, the truth is closer to, quote, screw yourself and pay more VIG. And he gives you the math, the probabilities, the return, the odds, and the stakes, and he gives you a thorough breakdown of the commission that the bookmakers take from the cash out. And the math doesn't really line up. Adam said there are two exceptions to the cash out. Number one, you stand to earn a life-changing amount of money. Number two, something in the game has changed significantly and the odds haven't moved yet, like a quarterback goes out or the starting point guard goes out. In that case, Chernoff says, yeah, you know, cash out. But it's a very good thread, and he's got 25-30 tweets in here about cash out or not, and it's really interesting stuff. And remember, Chernoff has the bookmaking chops in his past, so he understands what the books are trying to do. He is now on the other side of the counter betting, so it's a very interesting perspective, and I would implore you to check that out at Adam Chernoff, the thread about cash out or not. Last thing before we get to Alex Smith. I'm going to plug it again one more time. Uncle Kirk, Colin Sheehan, and Paul Zilm. All things Kentucky Derby and horse handicapping. This will be a chance for you because I know this is going to happen Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I'm going to get a bunch of texts and direct messages. Hey, who do you like in the Derby? Let me start by saying I am not a horse handicapper, nor do I play one on television. But the goal for this Spaces tonight is to put three people who are exceptionally good at this, handicapping, betting, bookmaking, and letting you listen to them. How do they attack the race? What's important to them? And the cool thing about Spaces is that you can request to ask a question. Last week, we had Costos, Prince, and Molitor on, and people are asking these guys who are firing bullets on the draft about certain bets and strategies. And, you know, if you went back and listened to that Spaces, I know I talked about this on the show last week after the draft, but if you go back and listen to that Spaces, you've made so much money if you tailed those three guys. And I'm sitting there like, Will Brinson is like, yeah, there's a 99% chance Trevon Walker goes to Jacksonville. And at that point, Walker's minus 160. Now, the draft is a very separate thing. It's way easier to win in the NFL draft than it is to pick the exacta or the trifecta in the Kentucky Derby. And look, odds are good that Uncle Kirk and Colin and Paul are not going to pick the right horse. But I think understanding the logic behind it, and I know a lot of these guys are going to be doing exactas, boxes and tries. They're going to pick three, four horses and hope that they get the two of the three. It's not just betting this horse to win or betting the trifecta straight, one, two, three. These guys do it a different way, and they've studied for this. They're ready to rock. They're ready to roll. They're ready for the test on Saturday at Churchill Downs. I'm going to learn a lot. And if I'm going to learn a lot, you're going to learn something. I promise you that. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, and I use the word again very stressfully because he's joined us so many times on the show and made us so much money, but he's also joining for the second time in about 3 days, Alex Smith at AX Smith Sports, the Ice Guys against the number, my favorite hockey handicapper and fellow Southsider. But we taped an episode that I was going to air on either Sunday night or Monday morning, and I deleted it like a fool. So I apologize about that. And I text you, you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I'll come back on. So thank you for being so courteous with your time. I just feel like a fool.
Yeah, I mean, things happen all the time. Listen, I had a hard drive crap out on me literally 10 minutes before I was supposed to do a show live. So, you know, technology, anything can happen. So I'm just glad I was able to, you know, have the time, especially with how busy everything's been right now. But time to redo it once again. So.
So a lot of the things that we'll discuss and that we did discuss are still evergreen on this episode on a Tuesday. But there are a couple things that you really wanted to stress from Jump Street. You like the Minnesota Wild to win the West, and you got a better number. You're at, I think, 11-1 in your back pocket. And as we tape this show on a Monday, they're about 8.59-1. The Wild do play Monday night. So if they win, and they should win, the price goes down a little bit, but you still like this team regardless to make a deep run. Why?
Yeah, absolutely. The way that they're built, they just remind me of a lot of championship teams. I saw they remind me of some of those early Hawks teams, those early LA Kings teams that won just a decade ago. They have true balance throughout their lineup. They have several guys that have great scoring touches that, you know, were, top goal scorers for that team. Kaprizov, the first 100-point scorer in franchise history for the Wild. The kid has been absolutely electric. You got a Hall of Fame goaltender, Marc-Andre Fleury, as your starter. Cam Talbot has looked phenomenal settling into that backup role now for Fleury. And you've got a great defensive core led by Matt Dumba and Jacob Middleton, an underrated guy who got it right at the trade deadline. They have everything, you know, rolling right now, and their mantra is to win right now. Dean Evason has changed the culture of that franchise, and I think they're ready to make a deep run.
Yeah, and Fleury in net, I think that is the future in Minnesota, and I think Wild backers would hope that's the case because they do have two really good goalies, but I would imagine Fleury's probably the guy that's going to get you farthest, but I guess we'll wait and see how that plays out. So you like the Wild. You told me you like them in the series, and that price has moved up too. I think you helped move that thing from minus 130, 140. I saw some books 160, 170 before some buybacks. So you're big on Minnesota. And then there's a series in the Eastern Conference that you're pretty high on as well, and that's in my backyard. It's Boston, Carolina. Obviously, we will have a game tonight, but that doesn't change the fact that you're big on the Bear. You like the Bruins here. And I was talking with Jeff Davis over at Circa, and he said, look, these teams are very similar. They're defensively responsible. They have a good net. But he thinks the ceiling is higher for the Bruins because they have proven playoff finishers and they've got offensive talent that Carolina just doesn't have as far as doing it in the postseason. The combination of Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand with a very responsible blue line and the addition of Hampus Lindholm, Davis thinks the ceiling is higher for Boston. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. Yeah, for all those points exact. And then you throw into the fact for Carolina, the goalie that really got them through the season, Frederik Andersen, he is injured. They got to go to Antti Raanta, who is slightly unproven as far as playoff hockey goes. He's been around for a while. He's been often injured as well. So, you know, this becomes a physical series. He gets bumped around a little bit. They got to go to Pyotr Kotychev, that third-string goalie.
Who?
yeah, exactly. You know, guy's got maybe a couple starts, you know, late in the year. But they go to him, and basically, you know, you're looking at a top-tier team, but, you know, now they're going to struggle with goaltending and going up against, you said, you know, Pastrnak and Marchand and Bergeron, one of the best, if not one of the strongest lines in all of the NHL. So it obviously, you know, just leads that way in my book. I like Boston for game one, and I like Boston in the series.
If you put your handicapping hat on in the postseason, do you tilt it a certain way? Are you doing things differently in the postseason? I guess the question is, how are you different as a handicapper from the regular season into the postseason?
So the changes that I make are mostly kind of take place after the first round. First round, I kind of bet similar to what I've seen from the regular season, especially this year, where you're not talking about as long of a gap between the end of the season and the beginning of the playoffs. We've only been a few days. And the condensed schedule that these teams have played, we might see some of that season fatigue kind of jump in to play in this first round with some of these teams. So I'll still kind of, you know, keep my same parameters where, as opposed to down the second or third rounds, obviously fewer games left. So I'll, you know, look to bet. If I like a team on the money line minus $1.45 or $1.50, I mean, I lay that price in the regular season, but I'll lay a higher bet a juice in the postseason if I really feel confident that team's going to win in that contest. So, you know, or look for a totals adjusted eight game. Maybe it's a team, you know, two teams get off to a fast start. It's a game that I like, you know, actually in a couple of nights or game one with Toronto and Tampa, where I think it's going to be a fast start, but then you could go jump in and grab a live under like 8.5, you know, and try to catch a middle of sorts. So those are different things that I like to do in the playoffs where I don't necessarily do in the regular season.
And I believe you were talking about this on your content. There are a couple teams that you like to just broom away the opponent in round number one. I've never bet on a hockey sweep in the first round, but I guess if you get the right matchup, it's bombs away.
Yeah, and that's what we've got here in both of the, I guess you could say technically would be like 1-8 matchups. You have Colorado, which is the strongest team in the Central, taking on Nashville. And you got Florida, the President's Trophy winner, taking on Washington. I think these are both big mismatches for the favorites. Colorado and Washington, and Florida. They both have high octane offenses. They're able to clamp down defensively when needed, and they just can, you know, continue to pressure you no matter how big of a lead. They continue to keep the pressure on. And Nashville's got a huge question mark at goal with UC Saros. If he's not healthy, they got to go to David Riddick, who has been awful. Predators have been 9-1 to the over in the last 10 games that he started during the regular season. So that spells doom against that offense that we could see from the Avalanche. And with Washington, Samsonov, and company, Vanacek, they just haven't really been, sturdy and stable. It's kind of been flip-flopping them as 1-2 all year long. And once again, going against a high-pressure offense like Florida, I don't think the Caps can keep up. So I expect sweeps, and I bet those exact prices. So Florida to win 4-0, series to end in 4 games, and also bet Colorado 4-0 exact, and Colorado winning 4 games. And those are plus prices you can find anywhere in the 4-1 to 6-1 region.
Woof. And shop around, per usual, as you know, 4-1, a lot different than 6-1. It's going to make you more money the more you bet. I remember I had to explain that to a buddy of mine one time. I'm like, look, if you're betting $100 a game at 4-1, that's 400, yeah, and 6 is 600. But if you're betting $1,000 on this thing, that goes from 4,000 to 6,000. And he's like, oh, I never thought of it that way. I was like, well, you better start thinking of it that way.
Yeah.
One of your series that you just brought up, Florida-Washington, high total on that first game Tuesday night, 6.5, juice to the over. So you got to lay juice to go over. We are seeing a different style of hockey now. I mean, we never, ever saw 6.5s in the playoffs. Hell, 10 years ago, you're lucky to see a 6. I mean, we saw more 5s than 6s, and now we're in that 6, 6.5 range. This is a series I can't wait to watch and see how many goals are scored on the total.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, it's not going to be all one-sided with the offense. I mean, you know, Washington obviously has Alexander Ovechkin. They've got some guys that can light the lamp as well. So we will see some back and forth scoring in these games. But I just think in a boat race kind of style series, that's the kind of play that Florida would want. And that would lead to their favor for sure. But yeah, like I said, 6.5s have become the new normal during the regular season. And now we're seeing them in the playoffs. I think those numbers might revert back to 6 and 5.5s once we get to the deeper rounds of the postseason. We do tend to see defense kind of play out later on. But in these first few games of the first round, I think we're going to see a lot of offense.
You told us a couple of years ago, this was the bubble series. It was Edmonton, Chicago. And you're like, I don't care what the total is. We're going over. And yeah, I think it was sort of, it wasn't a blind bet per game, but it was pretty much game to game. And those were just track meets and guys flying up and down the ice. I looked at the numbers on covers here, the covers NHL standings. Florida 44-30 to the over, Washington 46-32 to the over.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They both play, some freewheeling hockey. And a lot of times, too, it's obviously opponents they had. There were a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference that had some rough defensive years. So you add that to it. But just, to have this matchup kind of land in the first period, the first round, I should say, of the season of the playoffs, it's going to be very interesting to see, and it'll be interesting to see how the books adjust, because if we see a low scoring, first game, do they still stick with 6.5, or do they automatically revert back to what we normally talk about? Go, all right, let's go back to 5.5. This is going to be low scoring because it's the playoffs. All of a sudden, now you have value, betting the over if you think things revert to what you expected for game 2. So it'll be very fun to track along the way.
I know you do a lot of live wagering as well, and you've been doing this for a while. I'm picturing you watching, game 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And if you get that sweet spot where there's a lot of good scoring chances in the first period, but for some reason the pucks don't go in the back of the net, like say it's 1-0 Florida after 1, I'm picturing you just loading up on the live over. And you can do this in the Stanley Cup playoffs because the books, it's not a bookmaker and an odds maker watching the game and going, all right, let's move the total. The live stuff is all algorithm. So you could get a really good number. They're not watching the game. They're not getting a feel for how the pace is playing. They look at one thing, the score. So it's 1-0 Florida. That brings the total down to 5, 5.5. And then all of a sudden you're in a much better spot. You can go over a much lower number and really take care of business with an even better position.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, more than likely, I would say probably 80% of my attack for totals this postseason will be just doing exactly that, looking for the pace of play early in the game and attacking a total, be it under or over live, because you just get better adjustments. And like you said, it's all algorithm-based, so there's no feel and pace that's attached to it. And that's really what I look for when betting any kind of totals, whether it's the first period overs or full games or what have you. I'm looking for the pace of play playing in tempo. That's something that these numbers just don't reflect.
That's why you got to follow our guy on Twitter at AX Smith Sports, sharing the stuff you need to win in hockey, and got some great stuff on his website, axsmithsports.com. You have been diving into different angles of hockey for some years now. I mean, you're not the traditional hockey handicapper. I think you've sort of been ahead of the curve at finding specific markets and understanding the value behind these markets. And I go back to this two Stanley Cup finals when you told us, hey, first period overs in these games, and Tampa-Dallas was just bang, 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 bang the whole series. And then you followed it up the next year, and it was really the song remaining the same. But another angle or another style of hockey wagering is these elimination games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Can you explain how you sort of attack these now?
So, yeah, this is about maybe three or four postseasons ago. Started noticing that when you see a team in elimination mode, so, you know, they're down in the series 3-0 or 3-1, and they're down in the game 2-1 with about 7 or 8 minutes left in the third period, that's when they're going to start pulling the goalie. They're not going to wait for the 2 minutes or 3 minutes like you normally see them in the regular season. They're going to do this much earlier. The desperation is there because, hey, you know, this is it. This is the last game. It's do or die. So the coaches have now reflected that in taking more chances early in game, so where you tend to see goals. So you can look for the third period over, whether you find it live by itself at one or one and a half, or an adjusted live over that reflects 1.5 goals, you know, ahead of what the numbers will say. If it's, you know, it's already a three to one game, so you see 4.5, then you should see it be 5.5, or 6 to look for that over 1.5. But you'll tend to see 2 or 3 goals there, because no matter how big that lead is, you're still going to see coaches continue to pull their goalie. I've seen, you know, a goalie get pulled with a team in elimination mode. They were down 4-1 with maybe 5.5 minutes left, and they still pulled the goalie, gave up a goal. Now it's 5-1. So that's something to definitely look for and attack in elimination games, those third period overs, whether you can adjust it live or even find it pregame.
Who's the first top seeded team, like a 1 or a 2 seed? Who's the first one to fall in this postseason? Who do you think it is?
Colorado.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. I have Colorado losing to Minnesota in the second round.
People are just pulling over right now if they're driving to work. Hold on. You've got the Avs, who I feel like every pundit in the world is picking to go to the Stanley Cup final. You're shorting.
Yeah, everyone's picked them every year to go to the finals. Every year they lose.
That's true.
They lose exactly in the second round, too. So that's what I'm calling forward to you.
What is it about it? Is it the style? Is it the net? Is it the coaching? What do you not like about them making a deep run?
It's really just the fact that it's the luck of the draw. That's kind of that group of death thing that I talked about last postseason. The Central Division's tough. There's a reason they sent 5 teams to the playoffs, while the Pacific only sent 3. These teams really beat each other up, and I think that after having what should be a fairly easy series against Nashville, Minnesota's probably going to have to have more of a tough time getting rid of St. Louis. But I think the battles that those two teams had in the regular season, back and forth, you know, and you got to, you know, be careful. You look at a guy like Nazem Kadri, where we saw him the last couple postseasons getting some rough stuff in a playoff series and get himself suspended and really kind of hurt his team. So he has to avoid that. You have to avoid getting in the traps. And with either one of those teams, Colorado or Minnesota, should they meet in the second round, you cannot afford to give them a lot of power plays, because especially Minnesota, with even though their numbers did not reflect it the last couple of months, they have a dangerous power play, and so do the Colorado Avalanche. So the physicality has to be, they have to be smart about it. And a lot of times in Colorado, they get too physical, and sometimes the goaltending just doesn't hold up as well either. So that's the reason why the Colorado doesn't make it to the Cup Finals.
When I say the words Conn Smythe, it opens up a big box of possibility. I mean, you know, the heavy hitters at the top, it's Nathan MacKinnon, Austin Matthews, Cale Makar, Markstrom, Huberto, Darcy Kemper. I mean, those are the heavy hitters as far as the top of the betting sheet. But if there's a player in this postseason, and I know the way you roll, you're going to give me a goal scorer or a goalie that can get hot. Give me a name or two that could be a good bet right now. And as you know, if you give me a guy 70-1, he doesn't have to win it. You could sell it. You could hedge it. You could do a bunch of different things with the right bet at the right time. Is there a name that sort of jumps off the page when you look at the Conn Smythe list?
Yeah, you know, like I said, yeah, usually my criteria is that I want to look for a guy who's going to be a top scorer on that team or a goaltender, because usually those are the two highlighted positions that get noted for this award every year. And so when I look at a team like Minnesota, I would take a shot with a guy like Ryan Hartman. He's not the leading point scorer on the team. That would be Kirill Kaprizov. But Ryan Hartman's one of those guys that's been doing a lot of the gritty work, getting some good, solid goals. I think he's that kind of guy who could step up at playoff time and really make a difference in the big games should Minnesota go all the way and win the cup. When you look at a team like Florida, that's a team I like out of the East. Look for a top scorer like Alexander Barkov, or even a goaltender in that spot like Sergei Bobrovsky, a guy who has had playoff struggles throughout his career in his other stops with Philly and Columbus. If he can right the ship and make some big saves, steal some games for Florida, and then win the cup, he's definitely a guy who would get some praise and look for that award as well.
Woo, Ryan Hartman, you can find it 200-1 to win the Conn Smythe. Is it going to happen? But hey, if it does, man, you'll be eating good in the neighborhood forever.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I really think he's going to be a key piece for the Wild should they win this Stanley Cup.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with us? I mean, we've covered so much. You love the Bruins in the first round series. You love the Minnesota Wild to make a run. You're going to be eyeballing these overs in Washington and Florida. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the Chicken Dinner audience before we let you go?
Yeah, well, I mean, we always talk about, you know, this time of year, this is draw season. You know, the playoffs, we see a lot of overtime. That's, you know, I always hear about the clips, you know, famous, you know, double overtime, triple overtime games. And so you can make money on that. I've been betting these all throughout the regular season, these three-way draws or the regulation draw. And you want to look for that as opposed to the yes-no prop on overtime, because sometimes that yes-no prop, yes, will be at plus 280, plus 295. But if you bet the draw in the three-way, it'll be priced at plus 320, plus 330, plus 340. So you get the better value out of that regulation draw. So make a note of that. But there's a game, one game that I like tonight on Tuesday, Dallas-Calgary. I like that game to go to overtime, but you can find that draw around plus 355. Dallas is a team that plays a lot of tight games, a lot of overtime games throughout the regular season. And Calgary, even though they do have a good offense, Daryl Sutter is a guy who's defense first. He preaches controlling the puck, controlling the tempo. I can definitely see a slow game and that one going into overtime for game one of that series.
All I want to do is get drunk with you and sweat draws now. That's all I want to do. What are you like watching a draw bet?
I'm usually pretty calm, honestly. Like I said, sometimes I won't even, you know, if I haven't been really watching the games, there's other games on, I've been flipping back and forth too, and I see, all right, cool, the game's 2-2 at the, you know, end of the second period. I may not even flip over to it. Like, I haven't been watching it already, because sometimes, you know, you flip to a game. It happened to me a couple weeks ago, flipped over to a game. It was about 3-3 with maybe 38 seconds left in the third period, and all of a sudden there's that fourth goal. Montreal beat the New York Rangers 4-3, so crushed my draw bet there. So sometimes if I'm not watching it beforehand, I'll just keep not watching it. But if I'm watching it, you know, and it's going well, I won't freak out too much about it.
That has to be one of the most intense things to watch. I don't think I've ever bet a playoff hockey draw, and I trust you. I have a feeling if you pick the right series, tight defensive series, you know, good puck control, good net, you're probably in a good position to win a good amount of those draws. But I mean, it's 1-1 with 10 minutes to go in the third, and every rush on every side is, it could be the one that breaks your back.
Yeah. It could, like I say, it's more fun, honestly, when I tell other people around me, who, especially those who don't bet, that I've bet on something like that. And they look at me and they go, like, well, that's like a coin flip kind of bet, isn't it? And I go, well, not really. I'm like, this team actually, one of every four games went to overtime during the regular season. So I was getting a little bit, decent odds going my way. So the pressure sometimes can be taken off by if someone else is watching it with me, I guess.
Yeah. Well, when you get to Boston or I get to the Twin Cities, we will definitely have to make that happen. I really appreciate you saving my ass on this one. You made time for me at the end of last week. I blew it, but you made time again, as you always do. Alex Smith at AX Smith Sports. You can hear him on the Ice Guys. You can read his stuff, axsmithsports.com. He also handicaps for Against the Number. Let's have a hell of a season, my man. And by season, I mean postseason. Keep doing your thing. We'll be following. And again, really appreciate your timeliness and putting up with my ass.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks to Alex Smith for hopping on the show. Record check, 249, 254, and 8. We are up 8.3 units. Did lose one. Tough to take it on the chin with the Bruins last night at plus 100. Although, interestingly enough, in game number 2 on Wednesday, that price is the same. Even though the game got away from Boston, same price. Carolina, minus 115. Bruins had a lot of chances in that game. Didn't capitalize. And look, it wasn't the right bet. Did lose the Bruins plus 100 and 2 pending. The Wild series against the Blues, minus 130. And Dylan Cease, plus 800 to win the AL Cy Young. Coming up on the show Thursday, Uncle Kirk Rockwell, winning angle, sets the tone and the table for the Kentucky Derby. So have your fork and knife ready to go. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner. Stone.